Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock today. And I'll go over to Mick now. Mick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
And Mick, congratulations to you, because you have done an incredibly difficult thing.
Well, it was nearly time, you know.
Let's explain who you are, Mick. You were smoking since you were 14, am I right?
Correct.
And do you mind sharing what age you would be now?
I'm 71.
And you finally managed to kick the habit a year ago.
Correct, correct. Wow. And I'm delighted.
I'm sure you are. And I think a lot of people would think, God, if you're 50 years plus at it, you might as well, you know, give up the ghost. You're never going to get away from them. Take us back to when you started first, 55, 56 years ago.
Like every other young fella at that time, like, you thought you were a big fella when you got a cigarette and you were smoking like the grown-ups, because at the time, nearly everybody was smoking, you know?
Yeah.
And they were selling them that time in the shops in singles. To buy a packet of 10 at that time cost 1.85 shillings.
You still remember?
I do remember very well. I have a great memory.
What brand did you smoke?
I smoked Carols all my life. And they were a strong enough cigarette, boy.
Can you remember making yourself smoke that the first few times? Because nobody can smoke naturally, can they?
I remember it well, but it was it was so addictive. You see, once you got inhaling at all, it is very, very an addictive habit altogether, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, they say one of the most addictive, one of the hardest habits to break of all habits.
It is, yeah, actually.
And tell me, over the years, I mean, as you say, we were back in the day, like back in the we're talking going back to the 70s and 80s, smoking was not considered, the antisocial activity it might now be seen as.
Correct. And back in the early 70s, it was quite the norm, you know?
Quite cool, actually, for a lot of people.
Yeah, it was. Oh, it was the thing, boy. But not today, thanks be to God.
No, no.
Because my family hates them, you know.
At what point, I mean, I'm sure you tried to give up at various stages over the years, Mick, did you?
I tried my best. Well, when I say my best, I had no help, just on my own. I tried, and I might last 3 or 4 days at most, and back to square one again. You know.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt about it. I think anybody who has ever been a smoker will know that it is a horrifically hard one to quit.
It is, yeah.
So bring us on. And you're there with your other half there, Olivia.
And I am, surely.
She was a smoker as well.
Correct. One was kind of supporting the other when we were smoking, and we're supporting each other now when we're off them.
Yeah. So between you, you must have been, I mean, just like you were saying, a shilling and what back in the day? It's a lot more than a shilling now.
It's nearly €20 now for a pack. So for a person smoking today, are spending about 6,000 a year on cigarettes.
If you're on one pack a day?
and one pack of 20 per day.
And what was that where you were at in the at the finish there, Mick?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. So where did you get into his head? Because I mean, a lot of people would say, you know, you're 70. You're kind of goose. Your goose is kind of cooked now. You've managed to get this far. What put it into your head to have a go at quitting again?
Well, we went, the two of us, on this program for fitness for the elderly. And it was based here in Roscommon Town. And from there, we found out about this clinic that helped people give up cigarettes. Because we could find it ourselves during the fitness classes that we weren't as good as we should be at all, you know? So we had developed a certain amount of COPD as well, and it was all down to cigarettes. And that's when we went to this clinic here in Roscommon for the run by the HSE, which had a girl there. She won't mind me mentioning her name, Angela, and she was absolutely brilliant. She's the real cause that we are both off the cigarettes, because she was brilliant, and I would advise anybody that's in the locality that wants to give up cigarettes to go to her, and she will put you in the right direction.
Now, because I have heard of other people who have come through this HSE quit program. It's a program I think you can get right around the country.
Correct.
And it's an incredible support, and I doubt people realise it's there and it's available. It's available
they
for
don't,
people.
Actually, they don't, and I didn't know either.
Because I have come across other people who had tried everything over and over many years and had kind of given up on themselves. And through this HSE quit program, managed to actually come free of them.
That's right. And you get everything there. You get the patches and the whole lot of advice and everything you want. You get it there. And it's brilliant.
And what is the trick of it? Why does it work so well, do you think?
I think it is you have your mindset when you go to them. You have to have it made up, kind of, well, I really want to do it. Well, you get the real encouragement there from them. And that's basically it. It's psychological more than anything else.
And you kind of have to persuade yourself, don't you, that you're better off without them. You somehow have to kind of take a different approach to it altogether.
Oh, you have, of course, you know. And even though the first 2 weeks will be very difficult, there's no point in saying otherwise. But you have to kind of say to yourself, right, I'm going to stick at it. And we say, get the first 2 weeks over, you take it a day at a time, then for the next 2 weeks, and there from there off you go. Gets easier from there on in. So what you really have is a month of desperation, really.
And it was desperation, was it?
It was.
And what got you through that month?
I'd say trying to do something else. Go out walking, gardening, anything to keep your mind off cigarettes.
And I suppose the fact that you were doing it together,
one supporting the other, correct.
And also one not wanting to be the first to give in.
Yeah, that's it. And the support from Angela ringing you up, and she would know straight away whether or not you were back smoking. just by a phone call.
Really?
That's a fact.
So, Angela, so how often would she be in touch with you? Like, how much monitoring was there?
At the beginning, she was a few times a week, and then she continued on for at least once or twice a week after that.
Right, so it's fairly intensive.
Oh, it is indeed.
And would you were you on the patches, or was there other crutches?
We were on the patches, and they would you get stronger ones at the start, and then they diminish as the program goes along. You know, they get weaker, and then you eventually pack them in. You know.
So that was a year ago.
Correct.
How are you feeling now, a year on?
I'm feeling fantastic. I go out walking now. I can do two miles easily, no bother. I can do my gardening now, dig out all the everything for spuds and every vegetable that you could find. I have it all in my garden.
You must feel like you've gotten out of jail. Because there is that sense, isn't there, when you are really addicted, that you're kind of trapped. You get anxious if there's any kind of sense that you're going to be separated from the pack of cigarettes.
Exactly. But as well as that, I'm much fitter now. I'm never short of breath now or anything really, you know.
Yeah, it's an incredible program. I'll just tell people, if you're wondering how to get more information on it, there's a webpage the HSE has, HSE Take Back Control. So if you Google that, HSE Take Back Control, and that'll bring you to the website, and it has all the details of this quit program. Will you hang on for me for a second, Mick? Because I've got somebody else on the other line who has also been down the show. Sean, good afternoon.
Hello. It's on to the right, Sean. Sean Latton is my name.
That's you, Sean. Yeah, you're the right Sean.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm not the only Sean in the world, you know what I mean? And I just wanted to be sure you got the right person. By the way, can I preface my remarks? Will you convey to Joe, should that bad penny come back again? That fellow Sean, I've been on the show several times.
About right. What
is that or the other, whatever. Anyway, when I heard you were talking about people giving up smoking, I get them up. A lot of years ago, look, if I see me next birthday, I don't care who knows this, if I see me next birthday, please God, Bastille Day, I'll be 80.
Oh, wow.
Now,
okay.
It was coming up to me 35th, or thereabouts, when I gave them up. Now, I'd been smoking since I was very small. Look, in my day, it was only well-to-do kids went to secondary or college or anything like that. You had to get out at 40 and get a job, and you had to be street boys and the whole lot. So I was smoking from then, or even before that, on the QT. Do you know what I mean?
What did you smoke, Sean?
I smoked Gold Flake and a tipped cigarette out there. They were in a gold package. The name just escaped me. It's a lot of years ago now, you know what I mean? Yeah.
How did you give them up? Did you just cold turkey? Or?
No, I stayed off them and all that. But I wanted to, by the way, I hope the whole nation is listening to me now for the reason. The real trick about giving them up is wanting to give them up. Do you understand? You want to give them up. These are doing me real harm. And this, I got to get this monkey off my back. Now, and coming up to that, I read and things on television, whatever, at the time, and I was reading about all the negative things that they do to you. And they do some dreadful things to you now. Now, I don't want to cite all these different things. I don't want to scare anybody, you know what I mean? Well, people, when they talk about smoking, they immediately think of lung cancer, which is serious enough in any event. But it does an awful lot of other things to you as well.
Oh, it does.
So
but the thing is, Sean,
I
was a smoker back in the day as well. And I can tell you, I wanted to give them up really badly. But even wanting them really badly and even knowing and being very, very well educated in all the terrible things they do to you, I still found it really, really hard to do it.
Oh, it is. There's no doubt about it. You know, it's like going out and winning an All-Ireland medal. Believe you, it's very hard to do. You know what I mean? You do a lot of hard yards. No, but I'd say to everyone that's trying to do it, believe you me, it's worth the effort. Now, I don't believe at my age, I'm knocking on the door of 80, and I thank God you can hear it in my voice, I have a strong voice and everything else. I'm in good nick, all things considered, my age and so forth. But I wouldn't be here like this to you and the nation now unless I done what I done then. Now.
Oh, well, we know that.
The only sad part is over the same cigarettes, I lost the love of my life. My wife is in heaven. She, God love her. She couldn't get away from the habit. Now.
You see, this is it.
And there
this
you go.
Is, I mean, there is no doubt. And Sean, I'm sorry to hear that. It's the best thing you can do for your health, I think. I think that's what any doctor will tell you that.
No question about it. And by the way, we're all familiar with the old saying, your health is your wealth.
That's for sure. Sean, thank you for that.
No truer word was ever spoken. Okay.
Thanks, Sean. George, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Katie, yeah. I'm here.
you also managed to quit.
Yeah, I'm 74 now, and I started smoking, I'd say, when I was about 10 or 11, not seriously, you know, the odd one behind the bicycle shed, more or less, then into secondary school, and got wrapped up with it with an awful lot of other people and stayed with it, cigarettes, and then I gave up cigarettes in 1982, and I went on to cigars, inhaling cigars as well. And then between that and pipe and inhaling a pipe and other substances, smoking. And eventually, as I say, I decided, well, it wasn't so much health. It was the late Brian Lenehan helped me. Because he put so much tax on it in the budgets in, 2007-2008, the financial crisis. And I said, I'm not paying any more for these cigarettes or these cigars, so I stopped. But I had to get help, help in the sense of the patches that are like Elastoplast. The plain, colourless patches were no use because they would come off in the swimming pool. So the other one stayed on, and that's what cured me, really, the brown patches. So there you are. I retired from teaching in June 2009. I had given up cigars May 2009, and then I had a heart attack the 9th of December the same year, 2009.
Oh, so actually you were actually smoke-free when you had your heart attack?
Yeah, I always say to people I didn't have the problem of having to give up cigarettes because of that. I mean, I always remember a funny incident getting the stent. They were all pushed off to James's Hospital in Dublin, coming back to Kilkenny where I live. Coming back in the ambulance, the whole crowd of us were all sent up en masse, and coming back in the girl, one of the ladies said to the driver, would you ever stop for a moment? Why? He said, because I want to have a smoke. And she just had a stent in.
Oh, my gosh. Did he stop and let her have a smoke?
He just ignored her and drove on.
I do remember when I was in hospital about to have my children.
Yes.
There was some people in the ward were going down every few hours for their smoke outside the door.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember being in hospital as well myself before I gave them up, and you'd be popping out to the toilet or whatever and smoking out the window or whatever.
I know, but do you know, that just said, you always eat around hospitals, obviously. And the thing about hospitals is, of course, you're under massive stress if you're in hospital often. And that's the time where you want your, you know, if you are a smoker, that's when you have the real, you know, draw for it. Really, really hard. What do you think now when you smell cigarette or cigar smoke, George? Do you still kind of feel wistful for it?
An awful lot of people say, oh, I went back on them and all this, and they have to have one with a pint. Never miss them. Never miss them from the point of view of longing for them or anything like that. And I'm only sorry I never gave them up earlier. As I said, it was only a financial reason I gave them up. I hear a few of your earlier people there saying that, I feel healthier and all the rest. I felt nothing, absolutely nothing. My smell was the same. It has remained the same. Now, of course, I've become more healthy since the heart attack, which you have to walk, you have to exercise, etc. But I never felt any different at all, having given them up, you know. So.
OK, we're not supposed to say that out loud, George. We're supposed to all feel fantastic after giving them up.
Well, I'd be telling a lie. I really would, you know. That's the only thing I know is more money.
I'm sure, though, George, when you went in to get that stent, that the doctors wouldn't have been too thrilled with you if you told them you were still smoking.
Oh, God, no. I was 90% blocked on the main artery. So I've had one more stent since, but that was just simply because, not from smoking, that was simply because of stress. I won't go into the details of a stress in my job and so on that I had built up over the years, and then I found something other thing, blockage and so on. So I have two stents, that's all.
I think that's the thing, George. And I think, Mick, if you're still with us, the thing about smoking is you can smoke away when you're young and you could still kind of play 90 minutes of football or whatever you're at. But when you go on in years, you do, I think you do feel them.
Oh, you do.
Oh, you do. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I agree with that.
Will you stay with me, Mick, and George, stay with me. We'll take a break and we'll come back after these.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Evans, good afternoon.
And good afternoon to you too.
You're not a smoker now, are you, Evans?
I have given them up, believe it or not, after nearly 60 years. I started, I think, when I was around 12, and I ended up progressively ending up smoking 60 cigarettes per day.
60 cigarettes a day?
I was smoking 60 cigarettes a day, three packs. Wow. And then I got, one day, I'm out with the dog, and I was walking, and it felt as if I was walking on stumps. My feet were that bad. So I decided I was going to try and give up the cigarettes. And I started, believe it or not, having night sweats. I was in bits.
What age were you at that stage, Evans?
At that age, I was about 68. I'm 74 now. And I started on a vape that you're able to reduce the nicotine. And over a year, I went from a vape strength 7 down to 0. And I smoked 0 for about a year and a half. And eventually I just threw that in the bin and I ended up off the cigarettes. And anyone who knows me knows I ate them. I had 4 in the morning before I even had a cup of tea. I remember one morning I woke up, I thought I was having a heart attack, and I had 2 in the car on the way into the matter private. Nobody can absolutely believe that I went off the cigarettes.
Evans.
Since I gave them up, I now feel as if I'm walking on cushions because the circulation has come back into my feet. Now,
so did you say you had 2 cigarettes in the car on the way into the matter thinking you were having a heart attack?
Correct.
So you were what we'd call a hopeless case at that stage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anyone will tell you, I went to get acupuncture one time and it sort of got needles in my ears and everywhere else. That didn't work. I went for hypnosis and they couldn't find the brain. So, I mean, I was absolutely totally hopeless. But I am off the cigarettes now and I feel a hell of a lot better. Much better.
And you say that the vape helped you. Are you off the vape as well now?
Oh, absolutely. I was on the vape for about 2 years. And then I threw it there after going down to 0 nicotine in the vape. And that's the thing. If you smoke the right stuff, you don't have to have all this stuff that's coming all over the place that the kids are smoking at the moment. They don't know what's in it.
Yeah, I mean,
the stuff I was getting was from the UK.
I think because there is obviously an issue with vaping, and nobody's going to be recommending anyone to take up vaping if they're not smoking already. They say the HSEs will tell you. The best thing you could do for your health is don't smoke or don't vape. But as you say, it helped you actually get off that very big smoking habit.
They talk about addicts. I was the ultimate addict as regards nicotine. Now, if I smell a cigarette at the moment walking down the road, I still get a bit of an urge. And then I turn around and I say to myself, hold on a minute now. 20 pack of cigarettes is about 20 quid, I think.
Yeah.
So that'll be 60 quid a day I'll be spending. So that's a mortgage by the end of the year. And then because I'm miserable, I say, no, I'm not going to smoke anymore. But genuinely, it got me off the cigarettes. And anyone who knows me knows I eat them.
Yeah. Okay, great story there. You, even if you're the most hopeless of hopeless cases on them, there is a way out.
Thanks for that, Evan.
Evans, let's go to Adrian now. Adrian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How long are you off them, Adrian?
I'll be 30 years off them now.
And what was the moment for you?
I had respiratory problems and I remember spending two nights in Beaumont Hospital in a respiratory ward, and it wasn't a problem from the smoking at that time. But I remember I was surrounded by five other people in the ward that night, and they were spitting all night. They were choking, coughing, and spitting into polystyrene cups all night. And
you saw your
they
future.
They were a good bit older than me at the time, and I just said, "No, I can't. This can't be me." So I quit. When I come out, I said, "No." I'd always think of that day, of that night I spent, and that was it.
God, maybe that's what we should do for all smokers, bring them into the respiratory ward in any hospital and see, as you say, the ghost of Christmas future there in front of you.
Yeah, definitely. It opened my eyes when I was in it, and I just come back out and I said, that's it, enough's enough.
And did you go cold? Do you go cold turkey, Adrian? Or?
Oh, before that I did try for different times through the years, threw packets away, threw them into ditches, squashed them, broke them, and I just couldn't stop. But that just stopped me. When you see something like that, you just say,
never.
Definitely couldn't.
And
no.
Have you ever fallen off the wagon over the last 30 years?
No, I haven't gone back. And to be honest, I've lost two brothers from smoking and a father, so that wouldn't, you know, it would have been smoke related that they died from. So, you know, I was.
So, yeah, there was no way.
I wouldn't be going back to them. Definitely not. No. I hate to see kids smoking at the moment. It just kills me to see them smoke.
Yeah. Adrian, thanks for that. And well done to you.
Thank you.
Let me bring in Suzanne now. Suzanne, good afternoon.
Oh, hi, Katie. How are you?
Great, Suzanne. You have also done this HSE quit programme.
I have, yes. I did it in February of this year.
So how did it go for you?
It went great, but I actually got onto the programme and it wasn't from smoking cigarettes. It was to quit vaping.
Ah, yes, indeed. So did you start vaping to quit cigarettes?
So, yes, I was on cigarettes. I was off them for years. And then 8 years ago in 2017, I went back on the cigarettes following a trauma. And my son actually bought me a vape because he was very concerned about me smoking again, having been off them for years. So in 2017, I started to vape and I've been vaping for the last 8 years.
And were you vaping at the same level as you had been smoking?
Well, you see, it's very hard to tell with vaping because I was on quite a light strength of vaping. So I was telling myself that I wasn't vaping that much, but actually looking back, I never had that vape out of my hand.
You see, the thing is, you can vape in places where you can't smoke now, so it
correct.
Is easier to just continuously
correct.
Vape, yeah.
Yes. So, yes, so I was, it was completely by chance that I gave up. I was in a pharmacy in January, and I just noticed that there was a promotion on with nicotine replacement patches. And that caught my eye. So I went up and asked the pharmacist, how much of this stuff do I need to take to get off vaping? And she said, well, actually, I don't know the answer to that question, but I certainly know somebody who will know. And she rang the HSE quit service, and she was speaking to a guy called Alan. And it was really funny, actually, because within a few seconds, the pharmacist said, yes, she is here. And she handed the phone over the counter to me. So before I had a chance to even think about what I was doing or getting into, I had an appointment with Alan for the following morning at about 9:30, 10 o'clock.
They know so, to strike while the iron is hot, obviously.
Absolutely. So before I even had a chance to think, but I went in. I know you have to make up your mind. It was something that I really wanted to stop doing. I really, really hated being tied to the vape. I hated the anxiety of having it in my hand all the time, of the anxiety of the thoughts of not having it on my person, the waste of money. And I was telling myself that I wasn't doing myself any harm with vaping, but I was. And the vaping, two things where it affected me was it affected my oral health. So my gums were very inflamed. And secondly, it affected my sleep because I would wake up during the night and I would take a vape. And it's amazing how well I'm sleeping now since I stopped vaping.
So you were actually waking up to vape?
Yeah. I was waking up to vape. And the thing is, is that I am a menopausal woman and I have been going to my GP saying menopause, menopause, lack of sleep, la, 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 listing off all my my symptoms of menopause, which of which I had many. And I went on HRT. But amazingly, when I stopped vaping, I started to sleep through the night. And I haven't looked back because obviously nicotine is a stimulant. So even though I was only on the lightest strength, 3 milligrams or whatever, my body was craving it. So
and it was waking you up?
It was waking me up. So, yeah.
So you would recommend?
Yeah.
So Alan was your Angela, basically. Yeah.
Alan was my Angela. The only thing I will say is that people mightn't be aware, the HSC quit service is free to everybody. If you smoke cigarettes, your nicotine replacement therapy is free as part of that program. However, if you vape, you have to buy your own nicotine replacement product. The government have not caught up yet. Okay? So they'll you can avail of everything free if you smoke cigarettes. If you want to stop vaping, you can attend these sessions and you can avail of the service. But they cannot provide you with the free nicotine replacement products. And they're very expensive.
Sorry, does the nicotine replacement that they give you for the cigarettes not work for the vaping as well?
Yeah, it does, but you have to, if you're giving up cigarettes and you're registered with the HSC Quit Service, you get those products free.
Yeah.
You don't have to pay for them. But if you're giving up vaping...
Yeah, but are the same products not... Are the same products not available, no?
The same products are available.
But they charge you for them if it happens to be vaping is your issue, is it?
Correct.
Would you tell a little white lie and say that you're smoking?
No, I'm sure that I would imagine that the HSC person who is registering you on their books as a quitter has to tell the truth. They can't be telling porkies. So, and it was explained to me, I'm really sorry, we can only give you the nicotine stuff free if you're giving up cigarettes.
Yeah,
it's not within our remit yet to provide those products.
And
for
they're pricey enough, those nicotine replacement products,
aren't
they?
I mean, they are very, I mean, obviously it's not as expensive as consistently buying vape stuff, but they were very expensive,
Well, not as sorry Suzanne, I have to, of course, not as expensive as actual cigarettes or actual vaping products. But it just seemed very unfair if you'll get them for the
I mean the service is free, but the service and I mean the support I got, and you know the first day I have to tell you when he said to me, you know, I think we'll set a date, and it was a month ahead, and I actually started to cry. My stomach did a flip, and I said, I can't even picture. And they were like, they just hold your hand, and they just get you through it, and you kind of set a date, which is 4 or 5 weeks ahead in advance, and you just kind of psychologically prepare yourself with their help. And he checked in like that again. He checked in all the time. He checked in during. He checked in after. He followed up all the time. And my partner gave up as well a month later. So we're both vape free. And we hadn't planned to be.
Well, thank God that pharmacist picked up the phone that day. Or you'd still be vaping away, definitely. Suzanne. It's just I think that people just don't realise this service is available.
Oh, no,
this quit service.
It is brilliant.
Yeah, it's delighted to be able to bring people's attention to it, I'll tell you. As I say, because I know of other people who have had great success on it as well, who would have considered themselves, our caller there, hopeless altogether. Yeah. Suzanne, thanks so much for that. It's good to know it works for all nicotine issues. But a good point as well to raise. Why would you not get the nicotine replacement for vaping as much as you would for cigarettes? Let me bring in Marianne now. Marianne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Katie. My intervention is going to be very pathetic after all of those deep and profound points that people raised with you just previously.
Well, I see. You actually gave up smoking at age 10.
I gave up smoking at 10, yes. I was delegated. I was the youngest of five brothers, terrified of the whole bloody lot of them. The two nearest to me delegated me to steal my father's cigarettes. He had in one of the bedrooms, not his own bedroom, but not mine either, nor theirs, he had a wardrobe full of Churchman cigarette packets because I think he thought World War III was going to break out and he wouldn't be short of cigarettes if that occurred to blazes with anything else. So I was the one who was to steal the cigarettes. And then we would go down to a shed at the end of the garden and we would smoke our heads off. I mean, multiple packets of cigarettes. And also we would have smoking parties with other unfortunate children, friends of my two brothers. We also had a lovely habit when my parents had cocktail parties. Those were the days.
God, you were posh, Marianne.
They're very posh. Not now, but then. And I went instead from rags to riches the other way around. But anyway, we would go in after the elegant guests had left and we would have three glasses and we would pour all the mixture of cocktails into the three glasses and we would drink them and smoking the residual cigars that were left over by these elegant guests. And that was really the story of my childhood up to the age of 10, which probably would have kept on, but I got sicker and sicker and sicker.
I'm not surprised.
And my parents had no idea what was causing it. So they insisted that I was to have my appendix removed because that seemed to be something, if you got rid of that, something better would happen. And that is when I confessed that I was smoking. So I gave up cigarettes. I never took them. I hated cigarettes. And the other thing is my mother, because I was fragile apparently, my mother used to give me egg flips every morning with whiskey in them.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that made me give up whiskey at the age of 10 too. There you go.
So you got all your bad habits out of the way before you ever became a teenager.
Not all, but a goodly lot.
Marianne, thanks for that. That must be one
not
of the youngest quitters we're going to have today, I would say, Marianne. The youngest and the poshest.
Much,
the youngest and the poshest. Thanks, Marianne.
Bye-bye to you.
Bye-bye. Kathleen. Good afternoon, Kathleen.
Hello, Marianne.
This is Katie, Kathleen.
Hello, Katie.
You are off the fags 4 years, is that right?
4 years and 2 months.
Yeah, and you are counting the 2 months still.
I do, yeah. I can't, every day, you know, I don't think about cigarettes anymore.
Yeah.
I just a switch turned one day and that was it. And yet I carried cigarettes for 2 years just in case I needed them. And then I just threw the packet away.
So you actually, you gave up. How long had you been smoking, Kathleen?
I started smoking at the age of 18 and gave them up 4 years ago. And I'm 72 now.
Wow. So as you say, you a switch flipped for you. You gave up. How did you have the willpower not to give in to cravings when you were carrying that pack of cigarettes around with you for all that time?
I never thought about it. I just had them in my bag, packet of cigarettes in my bag. And after 2 years, I just said, oh, here, throw them away. Don't need them. And that was it. And I travelled all over the world. I played table tennis. And, you know, I did try before giving them up. And I had a row with my coach at the tournament. So I ended up going through snow in Croatia and got a packet of fags and went back on the fags. And now I'm off them 4 years. And I don't miss them, you know, so I'm chuffed with the way things have gone for me.
And what did you put it down to, that you could just give them up like that after all those years?
Somebody said, Kathleen, a switch will turn and then you will give up cigarettes. And that's exactly what happened to me. I can't believe that. So I was waiting for that switch. And I hear people, an awful lot of my friends went back on the cigarettes and things like that. But no, I haven't come back on them. And I never think about them. And when I see youngsters, I say, God, you don't know what you're doing. You know, I just say, don't go down that road. It's not good. And that's what I do try to say, like, to the kids, you know. Don't bother with them.
Oh God, you know? Yeah, no. And in fairness, a lot the kids are not bothering too much with them. I think the vaping is a bigger issue.
It's great.
A bigger issue for that age group now. Yeah,
the sport should be there for the kids now, and that sport kept me busy. Even though I did smoke, I had a good life with my sport and travelled all over the place, and smoking, I don't miss them at one bit.
I'm sure you don't. That's the thing, Kathleen. Nobody misses them once they actually manage to shake them off. But shaking them off can still take a lot out of people. I think Mick and Olivia, Mick's wife, is still with us. Olivia, are you there now?
Yes, Katie, I'm still here. Yeah, yeah. How are you? Good to talk to you.
lovely to talk to you both, Olivia. Tell me, did you find it hard?
I found it very hard, absolutely. Now, I have been trying for years now to give them up because I was getting awful sick from the kids. We have five kids.
Did any of them smoke?
No. I had one daughter, she smoked while she was in college, just for that year. And it was because her roommates were smoking too. But she gave them up because she realised that it wasn't for her. When she'd finished college and everything else, she stopped. But she kept telling me, it's hard and this, that and the other. But she says, I was only smoking for about a year, less even. But she says, you have to, it's mind over matter. And now she says, I would think of them. And I'd be saying to her, but you weren't a smoker as such. And she says, well, I bought them and whatnot. But anyway, Katie, I've been giving them up and giving them up and giving them up, but never succeeding. And
until you got on this program.
Until I got on this program. And as a matter of when we went initially first to see Angela, and she said, you know, you've got to set a date for the pair of you to stop, and you have to stick with it. And it doesn't have to be tomorrow, it doesn't have to be next week. You decide, get the patches and go from there. And we did, and thankfully, it was difficult now. It was like losing your best friend. only I realised now they were no friend.
That's for sure. No friend at all. Yeah. You haven't looked back since, Olivia.
No, thanks be to God. And the kids are so happy, and they say they can come home now, and they come into the house, and the smell of smoke is gone. And, you know, because I used to live in Peppermint's. Katie, when they were away, and they'd come home and they'd say, oh, the smell of smoke in here. I was fooling myself, you know. But yeah. Thankfully now. I just wish I had given them up 20 years ago, to be honest. You
know? Well, I think nobody regrets having smoked any day longer than they should have.
Yeah,
Olivia, best of luck with that, and I'd say you'll never put another cigarette in your mouth again for either of you.
I hope so. But Katie, what's been good on the next 2 days, I said to my daughter last night, I feel like a cigarette. This phone hasn't stopped ringing. So listen, Listen, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you. And I'm looking at a gorgeous picture of the two of you in the Irish Times here. And looking very well, can I just say, after your year off the cigarettes.
Okay.
Thanks, Olivia, and thanks, Mick, and thanks to all our callers on that. And just to remind people again, if they are interested in that programme, Google HSE Take Back Control. That'll take you straight to a website, and you'll find all the details of how to get on that programme there.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And just one last word on that before we leave it. I just got a message in there from the Irish Cancer Society. They have a statement out on the vaping legislation, which is coming up. You might have seen there that ban on single-use vapes came into effect in the UK on the 1st of June. And the Irish Cancer Society is calling on the government to ensure its own planned legislation goes further and is future-proofed. So that one we may well come back to again, because, as I say, you know, giving up cigarettes is one thing, but vaping can also, we do not know yet fully the long-term implications of vaping. So we will leave that one there. I want to bring in Keith now. Keith, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Very well, Keith. Keith, tell me, you want to talk to us about, well, it started off this issue of, and it's something a lot of people will have wrestled with, you had an issue with being hacked on Facebook first.
I did, yes, May 2023.
And just explain what happened. I mean, it's something, it's a trap a lot of people will have fallen into.
So I received a message from Meta on Messenger claiming that a group I had called Christie's Irregulars, which we were a bunch of people that just got together and we did charitable runs or charities, cancer studies and all that kind of stuff. They said that the group page didn't conform to community standards, that I had to input my password within a certain time. If I didn't, I was going to lose my page. So I was tired. I was a bus driver. I was still a bus driver. And I said, do I take this real or do I take it on a whim? So I said, right, I put in the password, page disappeared. My Facebook page.
So it was one of those phishing.
I think they were looking. I was talking to a friend of mine that's pretty knowledgeable on this kind of stuff, and he reckons they were trying to hack your email address for the likes of bank details, etc.
Yeah.
Now, how true that is, I don't know. I'm not big up on this stuff. But a couple of months had passed. My daughter rang me, said, "Dad, your page is still there, but it's under the name, a false name of Keita Bomi." So trying to access the page, could not access the page. Did all the channels that Facebook gave you, where you went to the health centre and tell you how to recover your page if it's been hacked, etc., etc. Tried to recover my page, and every time I did, Facebook came back and said, there's no account associated with this email address. So the email address was gone off completely.
Okay, so now that's annoying for anybody, and it can be devastating, I suppose, if your business is attached to pages on Facebook like that and you're trying to sort that out. But for you, you have a very personal reason why this was really upsetting, Keith.
So in May, bank holiday began 2011, my son drowned in Liffey here in Clane. And about a year, maybe 2 years later, a friend of his started up a remembrance page of him.
What, Keith, just take us back. Your son was what age at that stage?
He was 14.
And just, I don't want to upset you now and going into any big details on it, but what actually happened?
So it was the May bank holiday again, 2011, and the weather was extremely warm that weekend. And it was a Saturday, and they decided to go swimming down to Liffey here in Clane. And up in a small area of a field, there was a tree with a swing. There was a makeshift swing put on where a lot of kids, youngsters went down, they would swing in, jump in and come back out. But they were there all day, I'd say, through fatigue with the heat and whatnot. He went in for a second jump, got caught into trouble and didn't come out. We found out afterwards, because that Liffey is fed by the Blessing Lakes of Pool of Fuca, at that stage, when the accident happened at 5:30, or even 5:30, 6:30, the Liffey would have risen about 2 to 3 foot because of the water coming down from Blessing Lakes all the way towards Dublin.
Yeah.
So he probably got into it deeper. He didn't realise it was so deep. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. So, in relation to the Facebook page,
there was a page set up.
Yeah, and it was a good page, and a lot of people took solace in it. A lot of his friends could interact with it, that I wouldn't have on the likes of Facebook myself. And it was a good place for me to put stuff out there in memory of Adam that people could look at, they could enjoy, they could take down. The page wasn't private.
It was called, just to remind me, it was the Adam Keenan Byrne Remembrance page.
Yes, yes.
And as you say there, so there was videos of Adam, there was photos.
Photos, etc., yes, yes.
And all his friends could kind of interact there and leave messages.
And any events I was planning in the future was a good way to put it on that page. So they could see if there was anything coming up in memory of Adam, if me and the family were doing anything. We've done one or two things, and we've another thing coming up hopefully in the next year. And it was put off because of the COVID. We were supposed to do it during the pandemic, so we had to put that back. I'm kind of anxious over this because I want to try and get it back. I know with protocols and community standards for Facebook, I think that it's a bit too severe in the sense of what they're pushing. I understand you have to protect people. I understand that completely. But if somebody's page is gone, There should be some kind of recovery system that people can get that, but I can't seem to access it. And year and a half of trying to contact Facebook, between emailing, through WhatsApp, through private messaging, nothing's coming back. Nothing.
I was just going to say, of course, we did ask Meta, which is, of course, the parent company of Facebook, about this. And what they are saying is that if the email address associated with your account has changed, you can reverse this. That when an email address is changed, we send a message to the previous email account with a special link. You can click on this link to reverse the email address change and secure your account. So have you figured out what exactly happened when those hackers got in there and when Meta shut it down?
As I said, I got a message in on Messenger. Put the password in, and then all of a sudden the page disappeared. Now, through what Meta is saying about the recovery of trying to restore your
email. Yeah, they say you can reverse that.
Yeah, but I never got an email off them stating that. You know what I mean? There was no email came in to me in relation to that because the email address was gone completely, so they had no access to that email.
Oh, yeah, so you don't believe your original email was available to Meta to reverse.
Whoever hacked the page got to the email address and just wiped it clean from the page itself.
And have you been talking? Because I know you're advised to go through the Facebook Help Centre, and they've a number of steps there if you find yourself in this situation. You've done that, have you?
I've done it repeatedly, Katie, repeatedly, and every response I get back is there's no account associated with this email address. It's frustrating to think that, you know, see, I can ring you and I can talk to you and I can have a conversation about what's going on in the country and what's going on in the world and what's going on in personal life, etc. But if you have an issue with these corporations, there's no actual phone call where you can ring and have a human-to-human conversation and say, listen, this is the problem. Why can't you resolve me? Is there any way you can help me? No. You know what I mean? They have a centre in Dublin, but it'll be constantly empty. I think it's just an office filled with computers. Because I've never seen anybody, I'm driven buses around Dublin, I've never seen anybody come in out of that place. You know, it's frustrating.
Yeah, well, I mean, they say, and I'll just read out the rest of that statement, they say, we take the safety and security of our community seriously. We encourage everyone to create strong password, enable two-factor authentication, and to be suspicious of emails and messages asking for personal details. And as you say, we all, you know, most of us know that now. But as you say, in your case, you were caught off guard. And, you know, you thought you were going to be shut out of a page. And actually, ironically, by giving those details, that's exactly what happened to you.
Yeah, exactly.
It just seems particularly cruel that there isn't help available for people when it comes to these memorial pages, because we know how special they are, you know, when you're trying to keep some loved one's memory alive.
Exactly. And I wouldn't be a computer tech or a computer whiz. I'm in my 50s now at this stage, Katie. And like I said, Facebook was new to me back in 2010. So Adam put me on Facebook in 2010, November 2010. I hadn't a clue what this was. And he told me all about it. All the younger people were into it. And all the younger people were into their laptops and their tablets and et cetera, et cetera. The modern phones. A phone to me is a phone. I like me tech, I like me hi-fis, I like me TVs and all that kind of stuff, but that's about the height of it. But don't ask me going into that end of things, that end of the spectrum, I wouldn't have a clue. And I'm not going to lie, there's no point in me saying I know anything about anything, but comes anything like that, no. And that's why I think there should be some kind of a helpline where you can ring and say, look, I have a problem here. Anyway, you can advise me how to approach it. You know, so I don't know. It is disheartening, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I know Adam's 14th anniversary was just there at the end of April.
Yeah.
Do you still mark the anniversary?
We do. We do. We go. We have a mass and we have a family thing, and we come down. We let these balloons off. We got involved with a charity called Anam Cara. Yeah. I don't know if you heard of it.
Yes. Brenda, great charity. Yeah.
Brilliant charity. Sharon Barr was the CEO, and then we knew Sharon from, we knew my mum and dad knew her family from Davos and Shannon, and got involved with them, and they gave us a great idea called this National Balloon Day, the National Balloon Event in November. So what we do now is we let balloons off. We let, for every year that's counted, we count the balloons and we let them up, and that's what we do. We just have a family gathering, that's it, you know, kind of, we have a bit of lunch and a bit of food and whatnot, and just reminisce. You know?
And you just want that page with all those videos and photos and memories of Adam to be available to his friends and to anyone.
If we can get, all I need is to get back to control of it, because I was the admin of the page.
Yeah.
And if we could just get back as an admin on that page, like I'd be disheartened if I couldn't get my page back, because as I said to you, Adam was the first friend I had on Facebook, so it's kind of meaningful for me to try and get that back. But if I can't, I can't. But you know, it's the remembrance page is what I want back.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of a, well, like it's, if I have to go start doing it again, it's like there's up to May 2023, so 12 years of stuff on the page.
Yeah. Well, look, we hope that there will be some way to resolve that. It's kind of hard to believe that there isn't some way to get back into that page with all of that there. And it's when it's so, so important to you and to everyone that loved Adam. Keith, the very best of luck.
Thank you very much, Katie. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Take care.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, have any of our listeners seen a stork lately? Yes, a stork. I did not think we had any storks in Ireland. I was wrong, apparently. Cian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you? How are things?
Things are great. Storks, where they're not native to these shores, surely, are they?
No, they certainly aren't. So they're a really rare vagrant that they winter in Africa every year, and they then migrate after the winter in Africa back to southern Europe and eastern parts of Europe where they have strongholds. And there's a particular individual that is presumably being blown over from Africa over to Ireland during the spring and has been hanging around for a couple of months now.
God, he must be perished.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, like the rest of us.
No, he did get a blast there in May, so maybe that's why he kept hanging around.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been to do with the weather systems that we would have had at the time. So the southeasterly and easterly winds or southerly winds would have pushed it across, probably.
So where has it been spotted?
So this bird has been spotted originally. It's possible that it's the same bird that was spotted in County Kerry originally. We can't be certain of that because the bird has no ring on it. So originally where people got to actually see the bird was in a place called Codstown Grace in County Wexford, which is a little area of Tacum Shane in South Wexford.
And like, what was it when you say spotted, was there twitchers out looking for birds generally, or did somebody just notice this really unusual bird?
It was actually a local man called Tony Wilson. The bird was on his land. So what he did, he photographed it and sent it into a website called irishbirding.com. And that's for rare vagrants in Ireland. And people obviously saw this sighting and realised, you know, this is an extremely rare bird for Ireland, so we have to go and look for it. And eventually, after a couple of days, some twitchers and some birders found it.
And was he inundated, the farmer who had volunteered this information?
He kind of was, but the great thing about it was that he was very... he had no issue with people kind of coming into his driveway and walking quite close to his land. So I remember I met him one day and he said, absolutely no problem. He left maybe 10 or 20 of us up onto his farmland to view the bird from a safe distance.
And did you see it?
I did indeed, yeah. I saw it twice. I saw it one evening when I was driving home from Tecumseh after a day's birding, and it was just feeding away in the field with horses. And I actually spoke to Tony that evening as well, and he let me into the in on his land again.
And tell me, Cian, do you get a big thrill from seeing...
Oh, absolutely, from seeing rare vagrants like that that shouldn't be here. It's amazing. It's hard to explain. I would imagine it's kind of like riding a motorbike. I've never done that, but that's the kind of adrenaline buzz I'd imagine is very similar to it.
Okay. Literally a buzz, you think, as good as as driving a motorbike.
For me, anyway, I know it sounds a bit crazy, but that's what birds do to birders. We go a bit crazy.
That's brilliant. Cian, hang on. I've got another man who I think saw the stork as well. John, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
Now, do you get a buzz akin to driving a fast motorbike from seeing a rare bird?
I don't know. I don't know about the fast motorbike, but certainly boarding is very compulsive.
Yeah.
And I've often got into trouble with my wife because at the drop of a hat, I've gone off somewhere to see a bird. It's very difficult for somebody that doesn't understand what you're about, you know. It's crazy.
What? How do you know? I mean, are you all on WhatsApp groups or where? How do you get this?
Cian mentioned one there. There's a national site called Rare and Scarce Birds. I think at the moment there's around 500 members. And within seconds of anything being seen in Ireland, the report is up there, usually with a drop in as well. So if you really want to go and see these things, you've got to up and run.
So you've seen this white stork, have you?
I've seen the stork, yeah, the one that Cian mentioned a moment ago, yeah, in Constantown. I could hardly miss it, Katie. It's about 3 feet tall and a six foot wingspan. It's black and white with a huge red bill and huge red legs.
So it is the size of a fairly large child, actually.
It probably is. Maybe a bird that would be more familiar to people would be the grey heron. And it's actually slightly larger than that anyway, you know. So it's very, 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 very obvious, you know.
Yeah.
And as Cian mentioned, it was probably blown here by adverse winds. I think the technical term is a drift migrant. But there's also some reintroduction programs going on in England, and there's some talk that it might have been associated with that.
Oh, it might be a breeding program over there. And
it's a breeding program, yeah.
What's the rarest bird you've seen?
I think in Ireland I've seen in excess of 430 species. So some of those would have been just here for one day, maybe from North America, maybe from Siberia, Africa, who knows, or even at sea. So it's very difficult to pick out one bird, but certainly a lot of them would have been less than one sighting ever.
I feel like, John, I'm asking you to pick your favourite child there, so I won't press you any further on that. I've got Ed on the other line, and you're down in Kerry, Ed.
Hi, how you doing? Yeah, down in Kerry, yeah, in Tralee.
Yeah, this is where Cian was saying the first white stork was spotted.
So the first white stork for Kerry was over 20 years ago, down near Sneem in the Blackwater Valley, 2002. That was around for a couple of months. It's not related to the current birds, obviously. So I went down many years ago to see that one, and I saw that bird. In an Irish context, it's unbelievable to see this large bird, a black and white bird, walking around in a ploughed field or a green field. It just looks totally ridiculous and totally out of place. But that's the reality of it, you know.
Yeah, because is it bigger than... I mean, I'm thinking about what big birds would you see normally in our... we would have a fair few herons around where I am.
Yeah, as the lads were saying, you know, it's a similar size, slightly bigger than that, you know. So it's It's an impressive bird, and it walks around, like, you know, and no real fear of humans. I mean, like, anybody that's travelled abroad, I've seen him in Poland, for example, like, you know, and up on top of roofs and churches and chimneys and all that kind of stuff, and no real fear of man at all, like, you know. So, yeah, they're very approachable. And, yeah, so then this year we had two birds, possibly the same bird, who knows. You see, when these birds show up in the weather systems that Keane was talking about, the south-southeasty winds and high pressure, and there's birds left, right and centre, like we had with the hoopoes in March and April, it's very hard to keep a count of how many birds are involved. But this year in April, one turned up on Valencia Island, and then 2 days later there was one near Castle Island, possibly the same bird. It's very hard to know. Personally speaking, I think they're two different birds. You know, within a day they could be, you know, have travelled that far. Of course they could have, but just that to be on Valencia Island on a Tuesday and then in Castle Island, you know, 60, 70 kilometres away the following day or 2 days later, just sounds a bit improper.
Obviously,
me, you know?
Obviously the bird was doing the Ring of Kerry, Ed. Tell me, do you get the same thrill that Cian was describing there when you see a rare bird like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you know, when you put into context of this bird, I mean, like, you asked one of the lads there earlier, what's the rarest bird you've seen? I remember seeing the 1987 bald eagle that was eventually captured by OPW staff, NPWS staff, near Ballymac, not too far away from where the White Stock was actually in April. In 1987, so that's probably right up there at the top of my list of rare birds. But equally, there was a very rare warbler, the first ever in Europe, of a blue-wing warbler from North America down in Cape Clear 25 years ago. And
you're still talking about it.
Yeah, that attracted an awful lot of people, including Twitchers from Britain and everything. I think they estimate maybe 600 or 700 people came to that bird over the course of the day for about a week. So that can just tell you. These rare birds that do show up are a phenomenon, and they do attract a lot of people. And with the people that travel, there's obviously money involved. So Cape Clear would have had a lovely injection of tourist money or Twitcher money, whatever you want to call it, for those 5 or 6 days. The ferry company, the pubs, the shops, the overnight accommodation. And that's likewise with any rare birds, the length and breadth of the country. If I was to go to Wexford, for example, to see one of the White Stocks, I would have put money into the local economy in Wexford in a B&B and a few points that night to celebrate. But there is a buzz. There's no doubt about it, especially if you've travelled a long way and you get there and the bird is still there. Equally, there's a downside if you travel a long way to Wexford from Tralee and that White Stock is not there and you go, oh man, it's like the worst feeling in the world, like, you know.
It's probably not the worst feeling in the world, but I can imagine. It's a disappointment.
all your at the time is this rare bird and you really want to see it and then it's not there and it's like it's worse than it's just as bad as coming down Christmas morning and there's no Christmas presents for you. It's that type of thing.
Okay, Ed.
No problem.
I think you have painted the picture very well. Cian, before I let you go, any chance that we'll have baby storks? Not storks but babies now, but actually baby storks. Will there be any breeding?
No, I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think that'll occur in Ireland. But there, obviously, like Ed was saying, there probably is more than one bird around. But trying to figure out whether they're male and female is very difficult, to near impossible. Yeah. And the chances of them actually finding one another in the country is also probably not going to happen. So I'd say it's very unlikely. But
they need to get on one of your WhatsApp groups.
Yeah, exactly. And then they'll be able to find one another, no problem then.
Cian, thanks for that. I would put the word out there. The White Stork is out there still, we think, at least one of them. And a lovely thing to see, I'm sure, especially if you are a Twitcher. Cian, John, Ed, thanks very much.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And going back to what we were talking about at the top of the programme and people's attempts to kick smoking. Dennis, good afternoon.
Hi, Kelly. How are you?
Yeah, you were smoking a long time as well, Dennis.
Yeah, I was. I had a smoking habit that lasted over 40 years. And with the help of the HSE Stop Smoking line and a fantastic person by the name of Vivian, who was the Stop Smoking advisor, she successfully got me off them.
Well, now, so we have an Angela, an Alan and a Vivian now. These people are magicians.
Vivian is my angel, and I can tell you that because I had a health issue, and I felt that when my family was very, very upset, coming to visit me in hospital and leaving the hospital, and I would sneak out for a cigarette, and I said, you know, I've got to do something about this. So you were
smoking behind their back at that stage, were you?
Well, I wasn't smoking behind their back, but as the man says, I almost died, and I felt as, you know, if I don't do something, I am going to die. So I decided I'm going to do something. My son sent me a stop smoking, quit smoking advertisement on the HSE, and I contacted Vivian, and she talked me through it, and she said, listen, I'm going to be with you all every step of the way. I'm at the end of the phone at all times. Every time you need me, just ring me. And I have to say, just having that support there, I never rang her in dire straits, but just to know that she was there was enough.
And is that it? I'm trying to put my finger on what is it about this program that is so successful?
Right. First of all, is that there is no need. First of all, is that they will send your prescription, whatever you decide is going to be your way of giving up cigarettes, whether it's patches, Nicorette chewing gum, whether it's going to be the spray, or whether it's going to be those little tablets. Whichever you decide, they will send a prescription to your local pharmacy, and you will pick it up in your local pharmacy, and you will be on it on whatever is prescribed. And she will ring you, or they will ring you, and they will talk you through it. And week by week, they will contact you at a predetermined time, and they'll talk you every step of the way. They're there with you every step of the way. And absolutely, to be honest with you, after you're talking to somebody who's been smoking, I started smoking King Edward cigars. I didn't start smoking cigarettes. I started smoking King Edward cigars and inhaling them down to my toes at the ripe old age of about 8 or 9 years of age.
Dennis, we're actually out of time. I wish I had a bit more time with you, but we're actually over time now. I'm delighted that it worked for you.
Well, all I say to your listeners is, please, please, please quit now. Pick up the phone, ring them, give up the cigarettes, because I can tell you, they ain't doing you any good.
Dennis, good note to finish on. Thanks for that. It's all we have time for today. Paul Murnick was on sound. The broadcast coordinator was Stephen Higgins. Emily Phelan produced. And the series producer is Annette Egan. Stay tuned now for Radar. See you up next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.